Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. The Politics Show podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Ave, you didn't fulfil your promise to wear your Gestapo coat.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't go home last night.
And always come dressed as Christian Horner.
Is that, are you implying anything else or just?
You're wearing a Red Bull jacket.
Mm.
Or Max Verstappen, is that better?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd take that actually.
I wish I hadn't opened with that.
Do you want to start again?
Yeah, can we?
Okay.
I don't think I need to, because that sounds really.
Yeah.
What did you say?
She said, I haven't been home.
Oh.
Oh, fuck it, leave it. Let's just carry on.
Ed, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes, very well. You invigorated by your interactions with the far right yesterday.
Yes, it was good fun. It was good to see them.
Yeah.
Again, warm reception.
Old friends.
Old friends. Yeah, there's quite... There'll be a video report coming out soon. But I'll give a teaser. This won't be in the video. Because you kind of have to, like... If you're interviewing these people, you have to kind of build a rapport, like, immediately. You have to, like, get their walls down. So I went up to this group of lads. And this guy I spoke to had red hair, which will become important in the story. And he turned, he looked at me and went, you look like Harry Potter. And I laughed, went, haha, get that a lot. Haha, having a laugh. Then I went, you could be Ron. Atmosphere turned. It went so sad. Went, don't say that. I was like, oh, shit, sorry. I thought we were
friends. I abuse you with Harry Potter.
Dish it out, but can't take it.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yes, little man.
Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who could have seen that? Ava, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, yeah.
Good.
That's it.
Cool.
What's the leather jacket thing? What's going on here?
Mine is genuinely that I'm cold.
Right.
I don't know. Well, he's just...
I'm trying out a new look.
How's that going?
Terribly. No.
It's weird because you're very happy in your personal life, but it would seem that you weren't.
Yeah. It usually correlates with a midlife crisis, doesn't it?
I did see you get the call of the divorce lawyer.
Yeah. On the phone to a divorce lawyer, yeah.
Do you know something?
Leather jacket, but no motorbike.
I saw a black cab this morning, and I was cycling next to it, and on the side of it, it was like call a divorce lawyer, like, was the advert. And then it had, like, all these little speech bubbles around it of, like, reasons why you might, what else you might do instead of call a divorce lawyer. And one of them was, like, burn all of her clothes.
Oh, my God.
I actually was like, what?
That was like a focus group. And they're like, oh, look, things you might do. You might talk to a friend. You might try and go to like couples therapy. I'd burn her clothes!
Yeah.
She has wronged me. So, okay. I guess we'll put that one down.
I mean, in a way, if the advert does cause a reduction in annoyed husbands burning their wives' clothes. Tiny arson. I mean, it's a good thing.
Don't burn them. Just call the lawyer. Take them through the court.
Cast them.
Yeah. Call the lawyer.
Take all of her trousers.
So she can't wear them anymore.
She's consigned to a life trouserless. She can only do Zoom interviews now.
I can only see the kids once every fortnight, but I've got her leggings.
Yeah. Don't burn her clothes, call a lawyer. Or if you do burn her clothes, also call a lawyer.
Call a different lawyer, though, I think. Criminal lawyer?
Probably need a different lawyer. We were just discussing leather jackets yesterday, and I said I've got another one I can wear. So that's why I'm doing it. I've got a fourth as well. I could actually bring
that's
in as well.
Insane. I've got four leather jackets. Isn't that's an unusual thing to have?
I think the mark of a decent person is their quantity and quality of jackets.
No, sorry. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Four leather jackets.
Yeah. So I'm compensating for my lack of good character with multiple different jackets. They're different. I mean, this clearly is different. What's good?
I just wanted to show you that I don't know. It's got a really weird fit to it. Hang on, let me get a better
shot.
For
the listeners, Ava just unannounced took a photo of Ollie on her phone.
Okay.
She's now showing the
photo
to Ollie.
It's got a weird fit to it because this doesn't quite.
Yeah.
That suit guy on.
It looks like you've got the coat hanger still.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like it's like a hard shell, and you're like
it's a motorbike jacket.
You're like emerging from it.
I don't know what.
Like you're shedding a second skin.
Because the other one, the fourth one, is like tan with it's a bomber jacket with like a sheepskin collar. So if I was to wear that, it's another level up on this. I'm gradually escalating.
Different looks.
Yeah.
Different people. Who are you driving?
For different needs.
Be Ollie. You don't need this, man.
Ollie's a different man day to day.
Absolutely. Who's spoken to last?
How many leather jackets do you have?
Zero.
See, that's sus.
I don't think it is sus.
Yeah. Why don't you have any leather jackets?
Because I'm not in a gang.
Oh yeah. We really look like we're in a gang.
Sorry. I'm also not a neckbeard or.
Or
the Undertaker.
Why would you not want to be the Undertaker?
This is rude.
Sorry, that was quite rude.
I think The Undertaker is actually... I'd love to talk to Dominic Cummings about The Undertaker. I bet he loves him.
Mm. Probably.
Who do you think the politician most like The Undertaker is?
I'm not familiar enough with wrestling to be able to answer that question.
All right, so basically, he's in a coffin.
Yeah.
Thatcher.
Fuck you, because that's the joke I was leading up to.
Oh, no, sorry.
Very good.
Taking it.
Yeah.
Do you want to do more shit talking? Do you want to do PMQs?
No, we'll do PMQs.
We're good.
All right. Roll the clip.
Mr. Speaker, I know the party opposite is desperate to talk about my living arrangements. but the public want to know what this government is going to do about theirs. Yeah. Natalie from Brighton has been served with two no-fault eviction notices in 18 months. She joins nearly a million families at risk of homelessness due to his party's failure to ban this cruel practice. Now, instead of obsessing over my house, when will he get a grip and show the same obsession with ending no-fault evictions?
Well, to begin with, it is a pleasure to have another exchange with the Right Honourable Lady in this house. Our fifth in 12 months. Any more of these, and she'll be claiming it as her principal residence.
But let me turn to another Tory housing failure. Leaseholds are a rip-off and a con. But the government's proposed ban on new leaseholds applies only to houses. The majority of leaseholds are in flats. What's the point on a ban on new leaseholds if it won't apply to flats?
Again, the Right Honourable Lady is talking about legislation introduced by this government, which the party opposite totally failed to introduce in their entire time in office. And it's no surprise, because it's this government which has brought social housing waiting lists down by nearly 500,000 and delivered more affordable homes in the last year and last 12 years than Labour delivered when they were in office. But of course, all of this can only be paid for by making sure that we have a strong economy. And I'll tell you, her policy to repeal every single Conservative trade union law in the first 100 days would open the door to French-style wildcat strikes, sweeping away the reforms that made this country great. And we all know, though, Mr. Speaker, the one reform that the Right Honourable Lady would not abolish from Margaret Thatcher, the right to buy your council house.
Angela Rayner.
Mr. Speaker, I was expecting a little bit better from him today. He seems to be a bit worn out. Maybe it's the 3 a.m. calls from the bad men that have been keeping him up at night. But he also, Mr. Speaker, after 14 years, they failed renters, they failed leaseholders, and they failed mortgage holders. But, Mr. Speaker, I read with interest that the Right Honourable Gentleman has been urging his neighbour in number 10 to call an election because he's worried they might get wiped out. Has he finally realised that when he stabbed Boris Johnson in the back to get his mate into number 10, he was ditching their biggest election winner for a pint-sized loser?
So before we get into the meat and drink of no-fault evictions, what did we make just in general of Angela Rayner's appearance today?
She was nervous.
Yeah, I thought that.
I thought she was having fun. To be honest, I think she's nervous, but at the same time, having fun.
Ed likes his women nervous.
That's a horrible thing to say.
Why do you think she was having fun?
Because she was laughing. She like, see when she stumbled over her words, and that like there was a really like skin crawly moment where she stumbled over
several. I thought actually,
really, but there's one in particular where she stumbled over her words. But she kind of laughed, and I was like, "That's yeah, fair." And then with the glee with which she called Rishi Sunak a pint-sized loser. I thought she was having fun.
What did we think of the pint-sized loser thing?
I thought it was funny.
We're on two different sides of this, aren't we? I wasn't too keen on it.
Is there a split?
Yeah. Mm. Why are you not keen on it?
I think... Sorry, not... Oh God, I'm going to sound so wet when I say it, but I just think there's so much you can go after that has quite meaningful punch to it. I don't really think you need to go after his appearance. Because it's all... actually think that it makes it seem like all of the bad policy that they do is all right. Otherwise, you'd go after the policy.
She's calling him short, which he is.
Yeah, but...
But is it not just like an accurate description?
Well, okay.
Yeah. like, ugly. Yeah, like, I called him ugly because he's fucking ugly.
But that's like inherently... Like, it's not... Green culture. I'm not tall. If you call me short, I'm not like, what the fuck? Like,
well, I know that when you said it, you didn't say short originally. You said I'm not tall. So there's kind of like a sensitivity.
Yeah. I'm a pint-sized man.
I just thought it was a bit cheap.
Will we call you pint-sized from now on?
If you want to. Christian.
Yeah. I think you also have to be on your best behaviour all the time with the Tories. Because if you let one thing go like that, then the next time that they say something denigrating about your appearance, you've got, or they're misogynistic towards you, which, by the way, she has experienced multiple times in the chamber, you don't really have a leg to stand on. Because they go, well, it's okay when you called us pint-sized, but I'm not so allowed to work. Call
but
you...
But I think the difference is not like one is so much worse than the other. Like,
but there's no nuance with these people,
but there should, as in there should be. As in, like, people aren't like... I think people aren't... aren't silly enough or daft enough to like just think, oh, that is, you're saying that is as bad, so I think that is as bad. I think people have like the facilities to critically reflect.
Let me point you towards when she called the Tories scum.
Mm-hmm.
And they made that like a...
We
almost
still talk about it now.
They made that almost like a race war.
Yeah, which was dumb. Like, because it's not a race, it's not a race thing.
Yeah.
Or it's not bigotry.
But what I mean is they've set out quite a clear game of what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them any ammunition.
I'm kind of okay with it, to be honest with you. Like, I think you do six questions talking about the substantive issue of housing, which, by the way, is kind of grasping the nettle, right? Because she knows that they want to take the piss out of her because of this tax arrangements thing. So just go full send, we're going to talk about housing, and you do it for six questions. Then you simultaneously also say, oh, and by the way, Rishi Sunak is a pint-sized loser. I'm broadly okay with kind of insults, to be honest with you.
Can I offer another thought that I had?
Mm-hmm. Please.
let's go off the premise that Keir Starmer's core team don't like Angela Rayner and would quite like to dislodge her as deputy leader. The people who write her prime minister's questions possibly might look at a line like that and think, oh, we could overshadow the entire prime minister's questions with this cheap line. Let's give that to her to throw at them. And now she'll have weeks and weeks of headlines criticising her for going after someone's height.
I just don't think it has that much momentum. As in, it's not like he's small. He's a small man. As in, it's not like, I don't think it's that a big deal at all. And I think people would, if they're trying to generate headlines out of it, it's not like there's going to be like the people united against heightism aren't going to pick up this like baton and run with it. And if they did, people like, who the hell are you guys? You're six men who live in a pub room,
and you're all like, fucking short. Piss off. I'm not listening to you. I do not respect you.
What's that?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the actual. Oh, by the way, finally, I think nervous. I think she was nervous. I don't. You contrast that with her previous appearances. I don't know. It wasn't like Angie's going to fuck you up energy.
No.
I think they're wearing her down in the leader's office.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I don't think she's got the
broken
same.
Broken down.
Zhuzh or pizzazz as she used to have.
She also had quite a stressful time, I suppose.
Yeah.
With all the reporting. It's the first time there's been a really, maybe the first time, most recent time there's been a really sustained campaign against her, which does have more ground to it as well.
Yeah, perhaps.
I think she's quite aware as well that they've been very careful with their language about how they're supporting her. And they've done it carefully. Starmer's been very careful to make sure that his quotes could be reinterpreted to say, well, I just went off what she told me and throw her out. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like a real full-bodied support.
But I mean, even if they did, even if the mechanisms of the Labour Party were deployed to get rid of her, right, she holds an elected position within the Labour Party.
No, for sure.
But so she could just stand in that contest again, right?
I think that the aim could be to sort of wear her down to the point that she resigns.
Oh, right, I see. Should we talk about the substance then? No fault evictions.
Because you know, if she went, they wouldn't have to do the New Deal for workers, which is really weighing on Starmer's mind.
It's the last thing now, isn't it?
It's the last sort of, bastion of socialism that exists within Labour policy.
I don't know if you could even call it that, but it's still the last like progressive thing they've got. They killed the 28 billion. This is the last thing now. I saw Mandy was writing, was it in the Times or somewhere like that? He had something to say about it. So I think that's the next thing.
You going to tell us what you had to say, or is it just...
No, it was like, he was saying that, the New Deal for Workers' Rights is going to scare business. And so, Labour should consider.
Mandelson. Yes. Yeah, you're right. He did say that. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, those factions that are inside the leader's office. Peter Mandelson, of course, is just, for those who aren't aware, is advising Keir Starmer. Peter Mandelson is the old Blairite who loved PFIs and pandering to business, and he's been really important, integral in securing new donations to the Labour Party that have all come from big business rather than coming from the unions. So yes, he would quite like to see Angela Rayner go.
Shall we talk about no fault evictions?
Sorry, I thought that was interesting.
It was interesting.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. Comment below if you think I should just die.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Are you right?
No, I don't know. I think, I'm fine.
Yeah, okay. Would you like to talk about no-fault evictions?
Yeah.
Yeah? So why do you think Angela Rayner wanted to talk about this then? If given the sort of housing related issues around her, why did she choose this to talk about?
Well, it's the leaseholds, isn't it? That's what the big issue is. So there's been it's actually Barry Gardiner who's been a really big proponent of abolishing these ridiculous fees on leaseholds. So developers can sell you a flat, and they might say, okay, well, the ground rent for here is going to be £1,000 per year. They do not have to tell you if they're going to increase that price. And so in 3 years' time, 4 years' time, you might suddenly realise or find out, you get a letter through your door, oh, we'll put your ground rent up to £16,000. And you've got no choice but to pay it. You have to do it. And for a long time, Michael Gove looked like he was going to abolish it because it's totally ridiculous. And they have reneged on that.
Yeah, it's... and obviously, if they do that, you're then going to really struggle to sell the house, right? Because whoever is incoming, anyone that will buy the property off you would know that those are going to be the leasehold charges, right? Or the ground rent's going to be that expensive. So people are going to be dissuaded from it, and you sort of end up trapped in housing that no one else wants to buy. I think this has a whiff of being a kind of, you know, a future. Have you been missold PPI? That people who have been subject to these things in, I don't know, 10, 15 years time, you'll be getting phone calls, offering you legal services to reclaim what was taken off you. It has that kind of feel to it in my mind.
It does have a whiff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A whiff.
A slight whiff. Pint-sized Ed, what do you think?
Fuck off, man.
But you said it was okay, bro.
Yeah, maybe I was wrong. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I disagree with that. I stand by it being fine. It's fine that you shouldn't have headlines written about you in the
Daily Mail. Are you standing right now?
Yeah, I'm just actually really far away from the camera, from the table. Sorry, you distracted me. What was your question?
Sorry, can I actually just say, just to add into this, whenever I've done telly, I'm quite tall, and a lot of men aren't as tall as me. And so a lot of the time, if we're doing like a shot, like standing up, they put me like 2 foot back. I'm not joking.
Like Charles and Diana.
And then so that it looks in proportion.
That's very funny.
You could get, if you were a short man who was regularly in broadcast, you could get one of those kind of like photographer's stools that fold out. You could like just stand on it and...
lifts in your shoes.
So when they're doing a full body shot, you can just see you standing on your little stool.
Yeah, platform shoes would be a good one.
Yeah.
Stilts?
Stilts might be impractical.
Stilts under a trench coat.
Yeah.
Three small children under a trench coat for you to employ sort of on the children.
A penny farthing.
Pogo stick.
Why is he moving?
You just have to time it with where the camera's cutting.
Appearing in the shot.
I think the ban.
Do you have remarks on leaseholders and no-fault evictions? I know I called you pint-sized Ed, but I did actually want to hear what you have to think about.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like this. I think... obviously, it's a good... no-fault evictions... because it's something the Conservative pledged to do for so long and are just have U-turned on... they can't commit a date on banning no-fault evictions, and which is Michael Gove revealed this morning, and the bill that's been discussed this afternoon or debated in Parliament doesn't have the backing anymore of the Renters Reform Coalition because it does not back renters anymore. And in the plight of no-fault evictions, if the view turns so much, if they're enthralled to the landlord MPs in their own party, it's not brilliant. It doesn't sound good to the average voter. I think it was quite a smart thing to do, to grasp the nettle, as you said.
Mm. Can we actually discuss that clause about no-fault eviction? So what they want... because I genuinely actually don't know how I feel about this.
Okay, go on.
So what they wanted to do was, ban no-fault evictions, and that would mean that you wouldn't have to be on a... fixed term contract, you could be on a rolling contract with your landlord. But the hole in this is that at any point a landlord could give you a Section 8 and say, I want to sell the house, and so you have to move out straight away, and then they might not actually end up selling the house. Is that actually offering renters more stability to put them on rolling contracts and not force the landlord into offering a fixed term contract? I'm just trying to think, like, I think I quite like being tied in for a year. I know that it has benefits that you, I know that the landlord could give me a Section 20 whenever and I could be evicted and that would abolish that. But I just think the idea of being on a rolling contract to me feels really unstable and actually doesn't feel like that is in the favour of the renter.
Ed, it's different in Scotland, right? The way that this operates.
Yeah, there's rolling contracts in... tenants have much greater protections in Scotland than in England. But I think the problem with what Ava's saying is, or the problem with fixed term contracts is that allows you, say you don't want to move, like great for you, like young single person who you might move to New York, and that'd be really easy because you can, I can leave my flat in 2 months or whatever. But say you're a family, you can only get a lease for a year. You're suddenly thrust back into the rental market where everyone's on a fixed term contract. and we all know rents are crazy at the moment, you might have been going from quite a decent rate onto something unaffordable. So if you're in this rolling contract, you've much greater power to stay in an affordable home. That is your home as well.
Why do you have much greater power? That's what I don't understand. I'm not making a political point. I genuinely don't understand. Why do you have greater power if it's on a rolling contract? Because could the landlord not terminate it at any point?
But there'd have to be a reason.
But like, couldn't they just put in a Section 8 and
But then not
it?
The point of this, hasn't like, is that not just to abolish it?
Well, but they're not going to do that now.
Exactly. So as in like, if they don't have this, they can, you still have the same vulnerability or the same, vulnerability, I guess, to having it ended without cause or reason, and you're thrust back into this.
I think the thing that defines this for me about whether or not you should be able to ban no-fault evictions, and I understand the arguments that both of you have made there about flexibility and also security, and I think it's important to understand that, no one is making the argument in this that there is no place, for example, for private rented accommodation, right? Because there are instances, for example, where people do have quite varied and flexible lifestyles that work in different cities who need short-term solutions to their accommodation needs, and landlords fulfill a role in doing that. You can't, however, sort of use that justification in the context of the power dynamic that currently exists between landlords and tenants, because it is so overwhelmingly in favour of the landlord at the moment that tenants are getting an incredibly rough deal. So, for example, in the year to March, highest raise in private rents on record, 9.5%. The previous record was the year to February, when it was 9%. Landlords, as you've quite rightly mentioned, and as Angela Rayner mentioned, currently have the capacity to remove their tenants through absolutely no fault of their own. And quite often that is just because they want to charge somebody else more money for the thing. None of us can seriously suggest or think that the only thing that's going to solve the housing crisis is the Renters Reform Bill. There are many, many other things that need to happen. For example, massive house building program, large parts of that house building being council housing, government providing the funding, probably by a grant to local councils, to make those, to build those houses, and many, many other things as well. But it's kind of a damning indictment of the government's broader approach to housing policy, which is that even this one thing, which was it's never going to sort of revolutionize the rental sector in the way that you kind of need to happen. But even that standalone piece of legislation has been gradually eroded, watered down, undermined to the point now where the sort of previous organisations that had previously, you mentioned one there, was it Renters?
Renters Reform Coalition.
Coalition, who were kind of participating in the process and backing the process and actually supportive of the legislation when they've previously been quite partisan and critical of government policy, are now actually rowing back from it.
Yeah, they disavowed from it.
Yeah.
Well. I think a lot of the problem as well is that there's a lot of legislation in place that is on the side of the tenant. So, for example, you can't have a property that is full of mould, right? Legally, like, if that property is not safe to live in, it shouldn't be on the market and the landlord is responsible for it. However, the problem is when you're a tenant, it's highly unlikely that you have the capital to take your landlord to court.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you would probably win, you don't actually have the means to get there in the first place. And so this is what Sadiq Khan's been talking about creating these sort of hubs that will be like a legal advice, that you can go and get legal advice and that they would then take your landlord to court on your behalf if you're living illegally. The scale with which he wants to do it is not big enough. It needs to be huge. You essentially need to have like a massive call center and frighten landlords into really pulling up their socks and cleaning up their properties. But the idea is quite good.
Mm. Did you see any of Sadiq Khan in that Mayor of London debate on LBC?
Yeah, do you know what you're going to be really pissed off about?
What?
Every single news line that they had, I actually had on Saturday. But they took too long to send me the video. I only got it last night.
Nice.
I was saying to Ed earlier how annoyed I was. I was like, I got every single one of these lines.
Great comms.
Yeah, great comms.
Real nice stuff.
So sorry about that.
He's just in like
watch that on Joe later though, if you'd like to. It'll be up.
He's just in a different league, isn't he? To be honest with you, I'm not some massive Sadiq guy.
That's like a politician.
Yeah,
he's like an old school. Like when he came, he's like a politician. He acts like a kissing babies politician, like shaking hands. Yeah. Like we go to a christening, whatever. Mm. He like commands a room.
Mm.
Yeah, I think he just made thingy-majiggy Susan Hall look terrible.
Do we have that Oliver Dowden clip about... Oh, sorry, do we have the Sarah Jones clip? Can we roll that clip now?
Yes, yeah. We absolutely can.
Mr Speaker, the Conservative candidate for London Mayor has promoted Islamophobic tropes online.
Shame on her.
Endorsed the beliefs of Enoch Powell.
Wow. Yeah.
And claimed the black community has a problem with crime. In the week that we marked the 31st anniversary of the murder of Stephen Lawrence, does the Deputy Prime Minister really endorse these views?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, I think the Honourable Lady knows that she does not correctly represent the views of the candidate. And I find it extraordinary that she raises the issue of crime, because whilst Labour's London Mayor has increased the precept by over 70%, actually, recorded crime has increased 20% in London. That is the record of the Labour London Mayor, and no wonder people will be voting against him.
Sarah Jones raising some of the points that actually Sadiq Khan made to Susan Hall in that debate, right, about her support for Donald Trump, whether she still likes Lee Anderson, whether she still likes Enoch Powell.
The most dangerous opponent he's had.
Mm. Yes. I thought it was, and so, and, you know, Oliver Dowden's line there where he says that misrepresented Susan Hall's views, I thought was really interesting because, so let me just take the one where she said, Sarah Jones raised about crime, and you know, she said Susan Hall said that, you know, black people have more of a propensity to crime. Apparently, that's not true, which is weird because she once said, just this is a month ago, the black community often don't think they're being treated fairly because of stop and search. But you've got to look at the statistics of why police stop and search, such as the likelihood of finding knives. You're going to get more of a community reaction against the police if they're looking for people in your community. But there are instances, and it's very disproportionate, the crime from the black community. Now look, listen, Suze. I really feel
Big
like
Suze.
You said it, but,
Big
you know, listen, Big Suze. Yeah, you did say it. But if you also regret it, come out and say that you regret saying it.
I don't think she does regret it. That's, and then, that's the problem.
And look, you know, the other thing that apparently was misrepresented was her her propensity to like tweets about Enoch Powell, which she did.
Yep. Engaging with Katie Hopkins?
Yeah.
Not brilliant stuff.
And then there was another one. What was the third thing that they accused her of today as well? Oh, Islamophobic tropes. Well, look, listen, Suze.
Is she listening? Do you know her?
Yeah, you did like a few tweets around the time that Lee Anderson called Sadiq Khan an Islamist. And listen, Suze, it did look a little bit Islamophobic.
At the rally yesterday, which Tommy Robinson spoke at, Lawrence Fox, spoke at.
You were there for fun.
I was there.
I spoke at.
I wrote the speeches.
Pint-sized men everywhere. Ron, I'm looking at you.
the pint-sized Englishman is downtrodden under the heel of the Islamists in London.
The heel of the giant Islamists.
Sadiq Khan, also pretty pint-sized.
Yeah.
Pint-sized man.
And Katie Hopkins called him the nipple height mayor of Londonistan. The bad part of that is Londonistan. Nipple height mayor, I think, is quite funny.
I think that's good. That's good chat.
Londonistan, bad.
Yeah, do you know, nipple height, that's...
So I would actually go one step further. I'd say suckling height.
Motorboating height.
Bitty height.
Bitty? That was vile.
Sorry, yeah, motorboating height. Absolutely, that was
fine.
That was first class discourse.
I'm actually the arbiter of what's appropriate or not, and that was beyond the pale. Anyway, so back to my point about the rally.
About
the rally. But
he wants to talk about the far right after motorboating height.
About the nipple height man rally.
Yeah. Man rally is such a good... How was the man rally?
We want our country back.
Yeah. Were there any women there?
Yes, there was actually.
And what height did you find yourself reaching?
belly button.
Knee
height.
Do you remember when you got Minge in bio to reply to one of your tweets? I think about that most days.
Oh, yeah. That was good. Minge height. Anyway, the two main chats. So it was this rally was ostensibly for St. George's Day. So if there was a St. George's Day rally to celebrate being English, what are some topics you might expect to come up?
Being English?
Yeah. In
England's lack of its own parliament.
Yep, that's a good one.
Stella
Artois, like rolling fields, Shakespeare,
milkmaids cycling down misty lanes,
RAF,
long shadows on county grounds,
Vera Lynn,
all that good stuff. Yeah. The two main things people were chanting about were Tommy Robinson and Sadiq Khan.
Well, in many ways, the duality of England.
No. One was very, very, very positive. One very negative.
They're Sadiq guys. They're Sadiq heads. Yeah.
So you're telling me...
5 more years.
So the nipple height men were chanting about Sadiq's cans.
Fellas, did you know he's got some huge honkers?
Again, I really like... that there is a media monitoring department for all politicians. Well, Sadiq, they were talking about your cans again.
But Susan Hall, there was a man there walking around with a sign that had hand-drawn. Oh, this is quite sweet when people, like, adults, like, draw signs.
Yeah, like, went out and bought pen and paper.
Yeah, it was like felt tip. I was like, this man was in his late 40s.
His child's trying to do a drawing. He's like, he says, give it to me!
Fuck off! But it had a hand-drawn St. George's Cross at the top, and then it said, like, vote Susan Hall, anti-ULEZ, anti-pay per mile. And I was asked him, how has this gone down here? It's like, very positively. I was like, I'm not sure, but do you think their objections to Sadiq Khan are... Because people came from all over the country. It wasn't just, like, Londoners. It was people from Birmingham, people from Brighton, people from up north. Do you think their objection to... So they don't live in London, so they're not affected by ULEZ or anything like that, or some of Sadiq Khan's policies that might be unpopular. What is it about Sadiq Khan that you think they don't like?
Oh, I couldn't say.
Could possibly say?
He's a pint-sized loser. That's their, that's their problem with him.
Yeah.
His nipple height. Bear should be tall.
His tits aren't big enough.
Yeah. It's probably about his knights, though.
Yeah, that's the main objection. La mea! Soho open late!
La mea is lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not like quiet again.
Ed's hair is kind of, it looks like he's got two horns.
Yeah.
You've got two kind of like side
looks
spikes
like
in your hair.
Looks like you've been up to something upstairs.
Bit further forward there, yeah.
Oh, I can feel them.
Yeah.
That's good. Maybe that's a new look.
Do you know when I think
extra
you
inches.
Did it?
Extra inches.
I think you did it when you were secondhand embarrassment earlier during PMQs. I think you did it then.
Oh, like that.
You kind of went like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some cringing there. Some real cringing there.
Also interesting that you think that's some extra inches. What is it
very
with
telling.
You lot? Men always have such a blind spot when it comes to like what an inch is.
It's about 4, isn't it?
Yeah.
6?
You're probably right. When I was at school, obviously, as I've fessed up to, I'm a short man. But there was my friend who I was taller than.
Really hammering it
home. You know when you're like 14, 15 and you're obsessed with who's taller than who? Maybe I was. Anyway, but my friend Ross, I'm taller than Ross, but maybe an inch or two. And he went, well, that's only because you've got such a huge fucking head. I was like, it still counts. It's not like a
cheat. Well, your legs are bigger. Yes, Ross.
That's how height works. It still counts.
Did everyone see Ed on This Morning yesterday?
That's not even the best, like, Brit achieved something extraordinary tabloid story.
What
from
is?
The last couple of days. It's the Seagull Boy.
Oh, Seagull Boy is good.
Seagull Boy is clearly better
he's
than
joyous. He's
I've
like,
got the biggest cock in England.
Like, hasn't been like, so Seagull Boy, joyful. Mm. That's St. George's Day. Sad Englishman because his cock's too big. Talks about, wow, we don't have an empire anymore. That is.
Is that what he talked about?
No. No.
But I didn't watch the video.
It's symptomatic about the loss of Britain's state in the world is that, you have to feel embarrassed about your huge penis and feel like it's an obstacle. Whereas 100 years ago, he would be the Viceroy of India.
Yeah. He would have been London Bridge.
Like Walter Riley putting down his cloak across a puddle so someone wouldn't have to walk over it. He put down his knob. That's a drawbridge.
Do you think Clive of India was packing a hog?
I think you've got to be. You've got to have some level of like confidence. Absolutely packing heat.
Interesting. No, Seagull Boy for me, far more impressive.
That was mental.
He beat adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was really good.
He was really good. No. Should we have a clip?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the clip we all want to hear.
Yep.
That's sick.
So forgot he was competing at like the Seagull.
He traveled to Europe to enter that competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he fly?
I thought that the did you think that the judge had a bit too much leg out? Because that's what all I can.
I didn't see the judge's leg.
I don't think they were expecting children to compete in that competition.
No, there's a children's category.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
there's children's category. Okay, then he should have not had that much leg out. I was quite.
Who?
They got judge. 5 points for costume and also sort of just general sort of seagull likeness in their mannerisms.
Stealing chips and stuff.
And then there's a remaining 15 points for the quality of the cry. And they were particularly impressed with the variety. He had multiple cries. He had long cries. He had alarm calls. Yeah.
I think the costume thing is a bit cheap. I think that takes it out of it. Because there's no way he made that costume.
It corrupted the integrity of the competition.
You know when you're in primary school and you have to like make something? There's like a contest for who's made the best castle out of an egg box. And someone comes in with like, well, your architect father has made that.
Yeah. Yeah,
that has a water feature.
That never happened to me. Both of my parents at work. And disinterested in my education.
And how do you feel about that now? Are you okay about that? Yeah, you okay about that?
Fine.
Okay about that now. What was I going to say? Yeah, he won. He beat adults. I think it was in the Netherlands, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Or Belgium, maybe.
A Benelux country, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, it's sort of Northern European.
Yeah, you can tell.
Oh, sweet origin story for him as well. He got bitten by a seagull. And so they sort of they made it like Spider-Man. You know how like Spider-Man gets bitten by the spider and then spider powers. His parents were like, well, you now have seagull powers.
So he tried to jump off a building?
No.
Thank God.
That might be next. So yeah.
Well, he's about your height, actually.
Maybe he can fly and he just hasn't been brave enough to try.
Are you encouraging him to try?
I'm not encouraging it. It's an observation.
I don't know if we can do that.
What?
I think it's
encourage a child. If he jumped off
the ground and flapped his wings, you can obviously do that.
What, fly?
Well, we don't know that.
Yeah, he might have the right bones.
Uh-huh. He might have hollow bones and webbed feet.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Shut the fridge.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Should we play this clip by Jeff Smith?
Yes, let's do Jeff Smith. I thought this was a good question, actually. Roll the clip.
Earlier on in the session, the Deputy Prime Minister said that when the Prime Minister and Chancellor took office, they restored stability to the UK economy. Yeah. Who does he think caused the instability? Yeah.
They might want to forget it, but I remember the day the Conservatives came into office in 2010, and what was the note left on the desk of the Chief Secretary? There is no money left. That is the challenge that we have addressed through the Prime Minister and Chancellor successively.
I feel like PMQs has been corrupted.
Mm. I think by wokeism.
By wokeism, the blob.
Deep state.
Yeah, the deep state.
I hate the blob. That, honestly.
Me too. That's why we need to get them all working from home again.
No, but the blob is such a weird... It's just... Sorry. All I think about is...
I thought he would... When you said, I hate the blob, and it's like you're talking about periods,
yeah,
right? And then
yeah.
When he went, me too, I thought there was going to be like a... Yeah, I bet you did.
Solidarity moment.
Yeah, no.
Oh, no. Right.
No.
Oh, because Ed's a girl. Cool.
Sorry, I don't know if we're up to speed on calling Ed short has been like the height of banter in this episode.
Height. Yeah.
Ed's a little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not a pint-sized man.
I'm a tall woman.
Yeah.
Also not even that.
No, but I think PMQs has semi been corrupted by kind of people pre-writing what they're going to ask. They stand up, they read it off a piece of paper.
And they expect it to be clipped by somebody and put it on social media. God, who the fuck who the fuck did that?
Which fucking rubes do that? And 9 times out of 10, if they're a Conservative, the Prime Minister will actually already know the question that's going to be asked. He's already a pre-written answer. And I quite liked the nature of this one. I would describe it as it was quite, it had sauce to be like, you said this earlier, so what about this?
Yeah.
You fucking dickhead.
Like if it was like an AQA exam board question, it would get like double ticks, wouldn't it?
Do you think?
Because they'd be like, yes, the student here has referred to something that happened earlier.
Do you remember having to do oral exams?
Like French oral exams?
Yeah. It was terrible.
Oh, great. We're back at piss mouth.
you took it there. I wasn't going to talk about piss mouth.
Yeah, just the most... I did a practice French speaking exam with like a French assistant. It's like a French student in my school. And I said I was... What I meant to say was like, I'm excited about whatever. And I used the word passionné, which the student had to explain to me doesn't mean excited, it means horny.
You know, I did exactly the same thing where I kept calling myself caliente. Like this 20-year-old exchange student was like really like he was like not exchange teacher or whatever, he was over like doing a program teaching us Spanish and he was like,
no, not that.
Unless
him like getting increasingly terrified that you've taken the opportunity of your Spanish oral exam to like hit on him on tape.
Yeah. Estoy muy caliente. Muy, muy caliente.
That was like an Ed Spanish accent.
Yeah.
Muy caliente, sí.
So I assume you got an A star in that exam.
Huh?
I assume you got an A star for using my Spanish accent.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Congrats.
Sí, mamacita, muy caliente.
What were we talking about?
Jeff Smith.
Oh, right.
We were talking about Jeff Smith's muy caliente question. So, yes, I quite liked it.
Yes, and what Oliver Dowden did there, which was I thought was masterful. Statesman-like.
Forensic.
Textbook PMQs.
Yeah, but turned out to be a bit of a damp squib.
Oh, no.
You know?
Do you think we could do an entire one of these talking only in political journalistic cliche?
100%.
Yeah.
Should we do it now?
I was... Yeah.
We just were, weren't we?
Yeah, we were just doing it. Yeah.
Please, welcome.
Were you fucking listening or what?
No, I never listened to what you two are saying.
Jesus Christ.
He just sits there and he waits for silence and he's like, this is what I have to say.
Yeah, role play?
He just starts screaming, help me!
So Oliver Dowden was like, yeah, listen, pal. Nice question. I remember the note that was left. Oh, after the banking collapse, was it? Oliver? 14 years ago, was it? Mm-hmm. Oliver?
Also framing something that was a joke as well. Mm. That was just like a bit of like chief sec to the Treasury.
Yeah, but Oliver Dowden's got no risk.
They twisted it into it being like a confession of like being, oh, a smoking gun.
Do you know, like, it was Liam Byrne in the drawing room.
Do you know, like, the Zinoviev letter from, like, it was in the 20s. It was like they falsified a letter from Zinoviev, who was part of the Politburo in the Soviet Union. They falsified this letter from Zinoviev writing to, I think, like, the leader of the British Communist Party. Completely false. And on the Daily Mail were like, communists are infiltrating Britain. Completely made up, and they were able to use to be like anti-communist as a result.
Did that happen in like the basement underneath Noble Rot? Am I confusing two events? Okay, never mind. I'm confusing but two things. I think
being like, look, we have their manifesto. Liam Byrne is not a front bencher anymore.
No,
he's struggling on the Business Select Committee, isn't he?
And with the authority of the man who lost all the money in the Treasury.
It's rough, isn't it? You have a political career, and you just become. Like, your most significant contribution to British politics is that you're like the butt of the joke for the Conservative Party for 14 years. It's
well, also, they didn't even reply to his requests for witnesses to come to his little committee today.
Didn't reply.
So, the Committee on Arms Exports shut down, right? It's not been sitting. And that responsibility has been handed over to the Business Select Committee to examine. And he sent out notes to the Foreign Office and to the Business Department, being like, hi. Can one of you lot come and answer questions about our arms exports to Israel, about the licenses? And they ignored him repeatedly.
Well, that doesn't indicate anything suspicious going on.
No, and then yesterday they said, sorry, no one's available. And so he brought it up in the House yesterday to the Speaker, and he was like, Madam Deputy Speaker, I have been ignored. And she went, wow, sounds terrible, but it's not really one for me. So try again. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have left that fucking note, eh?
Maybe people would respect you then.
Pretty piss poor, though, for no one to turn up. The problem that you've got, of course, is that it's David Cameron.
Mm. And he wasn't particularly convincing in his last select committee appearance, was he?
Well, I also, you know, he's not going to budge on the arms exports, and I don't think he's going to give a lot. You can hide under those sort of contracts, you can hide quite a bit, because you can say that they are either commercial projects... Or you can say that they are issues of national security, so you don't have to give over as much evidence as other things. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
He was front bencher of the year, joint with Wes Streeting, in some award.
The Pagefield last night?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to him for being front bencher of the year when he doesn't even sit on the front bench.
The House of Commons.
Yeah. That's really good, isn't it?
Oh, David Cameron, eh? David Cameron.
Statesman-like, you might say.
Forensic.
Yeah.
Auditorium.
Yes.
Blob.
The most popular conservative. Future new leader.
Of all of the most recent prime ministers, who do you think is the most likely to make a comeback?
Liz. No one else would have the audacity.
Yeah. Because even like Cameron, you'd be like, well, you know, you're finished. You're not coming back.
Cameron.
I think he makes the most sense, doesn't he? If he's currently the Foreign Secretary.
Oh, sorry. Are we including Cameron in this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's made this comeback then. Oh, do you mean to be the leader?
Yeah.
Sorry.
God, you really do not listen to us at all, do you?
Sorry for needing more context.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Speaking of arms exports. Should we roll the next clip?
Yes, let's listen to Murray Black talking about Gaza.
2 years ago, when mass graves were discovered in Ukraine, this House united in condemnation and rightly treated these graves as evidence of war crimes which Russia must be made to answer for.
Yep.
Yesterday, Palestinian officials uncovered two mass graves outside the bombed hospitals in Gaza. These graves also constitute as a war crime, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, of course, we would expect the democratic government of Israel to investigate any allegations of misconduct, and that's exactly what they do, and it's exactly what the Foreign Secretary and the Prime Minister urge them to do. But I find it quite extraordinary that she seeks to draw parallels between the legitimate war of self-defence of Israel and the conduct of Russia.
Murray Black.
300 bodies, including the elderly and the injured, some of which had been stripped naked, mutilated, with their hands tied behind their backs. The UK's own arms policy states that if there is even a risk that war crimes may be taking place, then that is reason enough to halt the sale of arms. Given all we know, why then is the Prime Minister yet to do so?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, we continue to urge the Israeli government to investigate any allegations of misconduct. The difference, though, is that we can trust the Israeli government, a democratically elected government, to properly investigate those things. And, of course, we keep the advice under review. The Foreign Secretary has recently made it clear that he has conducted a determination and has not changed his advice regarding export licences, and I think that is the correct decision.
Ava, tell me about Murray Black's contribution in PMQs today.
So she was talking about these mass graves that have been identified in Gaza, and she was talking about women and children, older people, who were found, some of them without any clothes on, inside these graves. And she was saying that when they were found, mass graves were found in Ukraine, it was a moment of horror, and it was a moment of pause for the international community, where they went, what on earth is going on? We're going to have to really step up here. And it hasn't really been spoken about very much. And so that's what she was raising. Oliver Dowden gave a pretty nothing in between answer there, where he just said, essentially, Israel and Russia are nowhere near the same. And it's inflammatory of you to compare the two, which I don't, she actually wasn't doing. She was talking specifically about mass graves. She was saying that is normally a point of alarm. And for some reason, when it comes to the Gaza Strip, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, by his own logic, you should be more alarmed then if it's happening in Gaza, right? If a democratically elected government, a state with democracy is...
Did you say he got himself there?
King, you've played yourself. Yeah, possibly.
King, yeah. That turned out to be a damp squib, didn't it, Oliver?
Yeah, I mean, we have an interview with Norm Finkelstein coming out on the YouTube channel imminently, talking about... the massacre of Palestinians, and he had a very moving point, which was the statistic, regardless of how many people have been killed, how many people have been injured, the statistic you always need to bear in mind is that 50% of the population of Gaza is children. So whenever you talk about how many people have been killed, the operating assumption is that half of them are kids.
Yeah.
And that is particularly harrowing in the context now of the famine that's unfolding there. A report from Bethlehem coming out, I think it was yesterday or the day before, documenting that.
Downer's answer is weak as well, saying we expect the democratic government of Israel to investigate any allegations. Like, we expect them to mark their own homework.
Yeah, it's like Corbyn, when Corbyn was like, let's send the Novichok back to Russia. They'll tell us it's Novichok.
No, this isn't ours.
Thank you, Jeremy. yeah, for sure. I think this is the problem. This is the reason why you know, foreign journalists haven't been allowed into the Gaza Strip, right? Because if there is independent verification of any of these things going on, if you leave it up to the IDF to mark their own homework, chances are they're probably not going to implicate the IDF in anything that's particularly egregious. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then it might give some credence to the argument that I think Liam Byrne was edging onto yesterday, which is that why won't anyone come before the committee and explain why we're still provided? Actually, that's not even what he wanted. He was saying, can you just come to the committee and give us evidence why it's okay that we're still providing export licenses? And he actually was not being judgmental at all. He hadn't made a prejudgment. He was saying, can you just show us the evidence? Show you're working. And David Cameron actually wrote to the committee. There was a piece published, I think, by Alicia Kearns, a bit of evidence where he essentially said, like, it's actually the jurisdiction of the Foreign Office. And it's like, okay, well, you've pointed that out. Can you come and show us the working?
This is actually my job, but I won't do it.
It's so bizarre at the moment. I really feel like a lot of parliamentary procedure is just not being followed. And what's weird, I think actually probably for the last 3 years, you notice that actually there's no accountability, there's no punishment if you don't follow procedure. So essentially it's been acting like an old boys club for hundreds of years, where you go, okay, if
good
this
chap
minister
theory.
Yeah, good chap theory. If this minister is called to this select committee, I will turn up because that is my duty. But it, upon recent discovery, if you don't turn up, there is no repercussion for you not turning up.
I think it's one of the big arguments, right, against the uncodified, non-codified constitution that we have, right, is that previously, if the entire mechanism was reliant on things like, you know, your good standing within Parliament and
convention.
Within... convention. Yes, exactly. And then all of a sudden you get an actor who goes, yeah,
I don't need to do that.
Not for me. There isn't actually, oh, well... Fortunately for us, it's actually written, it's codified, it's written in the Constitution that if this happens, you know, you lose your office, mm-hmm. you lose one of the great offices of state or whatever. And I think that's probably one of the most compelling arguments.
Because that happened with lying to the House as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like that's been found out quite a lot recently. You can lie to the House, and unless there's public pressure for you to go and correct the record, or there's, you know, newspaper pressure... there's no repercussion for you there. Mm. Dawn Butler went and corrected the record the other day, but she didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
She just did it out of a moral duty.
Mm-hmm.
And having called Boris Johnson a liar in the chamber, you've got to, haven't you?
But you don't have to.
No, but okay, sorry. I mean,
you should.
If you're going to adopt that, her political position she's previously taken would be rendered untenable if she'd, you know, been like, you're a liar and you need to say so. If you then get something wrong and you don't go and correct it, you fucked yourself, haven't you? So.
Did you just sneak a little bit of parliamentary speak in there?
Correcting the record?
Rendered untenable.
Possibly. Possibly.
Good phrase, that.
Is that us?
Alrighty, Roo.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say, Pint Size Ed?
No.
He actually wasn't talking to you, he was talking to Pint Size Ed.
I would love it if we had like a tiny like 2-inch Ed.
Yeah,
I've got
that was
it.
Just like here in this cup, and he like popped his head up and.
Should we do that on the green screen?
Start squawking like the seagull.
Seagull boy is Ed Campbell. Cool.
Roddy Ray.
Yeah.
What else do they have to look forward to on the Politics Joe channel this week?
What else is coming out this week? You got your far right thing. We've got Norm Finkelstein. We had Baldwin and Steers talking about English identity. That's just gone out as well. Swede.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Swede. There's a Swede mashup.
Swede Mason's latest mashup.
I think that's us for this week. Is there anything else?
I'm just putting up some hot select committee shit today. That's it. Get ready to sit down and watch some hot select committee.
Select committee smut.
Yeah.
Smart. Cool.
Nice.
Should we wrap it up there? Unless there's any other bits of housekeeping you guys want to talk about?
Like and subscribe.
Leave a comment.
Review us on whatever platform you're listening to this.
Head to the subreddit.
Absolutely. r/politicsjoe. Tell a friend about us.
Follow us on Instagram.
Doing to different cameras.
Something's happening in Wales.
Oh, we didn't talk about the fucking horses.
I don't think we need to. What discourse can we have about the horses?
The imminent apocalypse.
That's true, actually. See, if this is the last day on Earth.
Yeah.
And I spent it with you two. That'd be very nice.
Be touching.
Yeah.
Be touching.
God, that'd be futile, though.
We've lost her.
Yeah.
I want to know what's going on in Wales.
Don't we all?
The country?
No, the digestive tract.
Pinocchio's been eaten.
Cool.
Oh, are we waiting until Ava finds out what happened?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Catch you on the next one. Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.